When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We've got earthquakes. We've got eclipses. I think we're missing, what other plagues are there? Boils and frogs. It's time for Doomsday.
Next on Eternal Dirtles.
But now I go. I'm keeping up with the Joneses.
Hey, I just want to give a quick shout out to all of our Patreon supporters out there. Thank you to the Dirtle Maniacs. If you want to be a Dirtle Maniac, go to patreon.com/eternaldirtles and help support the channel. It keeps things going. It keeps things updated. Thanks so much for watching. On with the show. Hello and welcome to Eternal Dirtles. I'm Zach Clark. With me this week, because Phil is out for a month and a half, Eric Rutkowski. Eric, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing quite well. How are you, Zach?
I'm doing good. Hey, man, did I get it right? I've been trying so hard to make sure I pronounce your name correctly.
Yes, that was excellent.
Yes. I've been, like, really practicing all day long. I'm like, don't screw this up.
Most people just give up and call me Tall Eric.
Yeah.
Which I respond, you can also call me Smart Eric because I'm not just tall, but that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah, I used to be like Tall Zach when there were like four of us working together, but now I'm just regular Zach.
Are you the only Zach?
I was at one point I was working in an office with four other Zachs and there were only 10 people in the office. There are a lot of Zach Magic players. But we're here to talk about Doomsday. This is a state of the meta, Eric. So what I want to talk about, and I'm going to repost this into the into our conversation just so that we have it here in our heads. But the big things we want to talk about is what Doomsday's position in the meta is like. And by the way, if you're new to Doomsday, you don't know much about Doomsday, Eric did a really great deck tech for us that you can find somewhere over here. Better yet, check in the comments afterwards. I'll leave it there. But what we want to do is we want to check out position in the meta. How long is too long? And are there any Thunder Junction includes? So this is going to be about 30 minutes of like just conversation about Doomsday, which is a deck that you specialize in, Eric.
This episode is brought to you by Tales of Adventure. Go to toamagic.com and use the code Dirtles for 5% off your order. You'll be directly supporting the show, and you'll get the entire order in one package. No more waiting for several packages. That's toamagic.com, code Dirtles for 5% off.
Yeah, it wasn't always this way. As I've told the story many times, I started with lands, and then I went to a tournament where I went to time a bunch of rounds, and I got home and said, let me try something else. And the truth is, with Doomsday, one way or another, the game's going to be over.
Yeah.
Usually I'm losing, but sometimes I win.
Yeah. Well, to that end, before we go into position in the meta, come on up, Brando. I know. Dog's like, gotta be in my lap. So before we talk about position in the meta, I want to talk about a question that gets asked a lot about Doomsday. And that is, how long is too long? How long do you wait when your opponent is doing Doomsday to say, hey, man, like, haven't you been, you know, been with all those cards in your hand long enough? You need to make a decision. I have an opinion about this, but I'd like to ask a Doomsday player, in the mirror.
Yeah.
Are you more lenient or less lenient?
I think it all goes back to the golden rule. Treat others the way you want to be treated.
Okay.
You know, this comes up a lot and I've heard many pros give their take. People ask this on Reddit all the time.
Yeah.
Certain other noteworthy podcasters talk about it on their podcasts and people respect that opinion. Frankly, they seem a little exasperated, but they also definitely use their platform as a way to give themselves a little bit of an edge. And
of course,
I'm also a little exasperated with this because it seems like a real edge case where it actually matters. It feels like a binary, either it's obvious that they are taking too long, mm-hmm. and you don't need to do that, or It's just a non-issue. And I want to give a shout out to almost all of my opponents in every level of competition. I've never played at the pro level of competition, but I've played Comp REL and I play at Game Story in Queens quite a bit. And people are very kind. And I'm self-conscious about how long it takes me to build piles. I think there are cases where I lose because I go a little bit too quickly. And I think that most of the time, it just doesn't matter at all. The game's about to be over. Like, this is the last meaningful thing that I'm going to do. It's just not a friendly play environment if my opponent, like, sets a stopwatch. And when it gets to a minute 30, they say, Bryant Cook said you should take quicker than this. I'm calling the judge. Like, what does that do for anybody? It makes you out to be a dick. And, like, if you're thinking about that, I would say that as a Doomsday player, I pride myself in making efficient piles. And if you're going to play the deck effectively, you really do have to have some heuristics down for how you're going to build a pile. Not necessarily for the speed thing, although it helps with that, but just because you need to know what you're doing.
Yeah, you need to know your deck.
Yeah. Yeah. And not every pile is from scratch. You know, people are like, oh, Doomsday is really complicated to play because you have to pick these five cards. Well, one of those cards is almost always Thassa's Oracle. So already you've cut down on 20% of what you're doing, right?
Yeah.
You're going to put a Cycler in there. You're going to put a Brainstorm. The decision tree gets really complicated fast, but the reality is that you need to have some heuristics.
Mm-hmm.
So with all that being said, I'm thinking about the pile I'm going to make before Doomsday resolves. And the opposite is true. My opponent should be thinking about what they're doing after Doomsday has resolved, and not thinking so much about how long it's taking me to make their pile. That's just more time for them to think, okay, well, I need to protect this endurance in my hand, or I better dig for dress down or whatever it is. And so kind of my default reaction to this question is, I think if you want to put some standard on it, it should take about 2.5 minutes.
Okay.
That is a lot of time, and it's easily, you could easily see a scenario where your opponent is actually taking longer than 2.5 minutes. And if you feel that they deserve that because they've been kind to you, give it to them.
Yeah.
Because this also brings up another question, which is, how long does your opponent get to sort your deck after you've resolved Doomsday?
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, the reciprocal is true. If you're going to call a judge the second I start making my pile, I'm going to call a judge the second you start looking through my deck. Because you're also searching and figuring out information from there. So I think that it's just a rule of thumb, the 2.5 minute things. And then my opponent doesn't get any more time to look through my pile than it took me to make the pile.
Sure. I think that's a fair assessment as far as the how long question is concerned. My stance on this is as a gifts ungiven player, which is a similar kind of concept, right? I cast gifts ungiven in modern a lot and several times per match. In several different scenarios. I had a toolbox style deck. I had a storm deck, you know, and whenever I'm casting Gifts Ungiven myself, it takes me no time, right? I know what I'm doing. I know what I want. If I'm going to go, okay, I'm going to go get Raven's Crime, Urborg, Ghost Quarter, and Life from the Loam, right? There's a great pile, right? Yeah. My problem had always been what you were talking about. How long your opponent takes to make the decision afterwards, right? They have to look through your deck and figure out what's going on. For gifts, it's much different. They have to sit there and try and figure out what the hell your plan is and why I handed you those. Because every gift pile is a trick, right? Like, there is an optimal way to do it, but mostly what I'm saying is like, hey, fuck, you know, like that's, you know, like if you look at that, like, have you ever had Gifts Ungiven played against you and like had to make that terrible decision?
I have not, but I've had Sauron's Ransom played against me.
Yeah. There's Sauron's Ransom is a great analog to this too.
Yeah. They're spells that take a little bit longer to resolve because of the decision-making process between the two players. I don't think they get held to the same standard as, certainly not as Fatal Push, certainly not as even Brainstorm. Like, we have a range for all of these things. I've absolutely had people take a minute to resolve Brainstorm against me. It depends on the kind of environment and gathering that I want to create.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
My answer to that question.
I like that answer. And like my rule of thumb is around the 3 minute mark, because for me, that's like, this is going to end the game, right? Like one way or the other, the game's going to end shortly. And my stance is always, you get 3 minutes to sideboard, and that's when I'm like, hey, yeah, come on, what are we doing, right? At three minutes, you know, just like a mental clock of like, yo, you're taking a long time, guy, you know. And I'm not a really aggressive person when it comes to that stuff. But when I think I'm being taken advantage of, and I think that's another big part of it is like, you know, you have to have a read on your opponent. If you think you're being taken advantage of, then yeah, you need to call a judge in any scenario, not just because your opponent's playing Doomsday. And to that end, I have never gone to time against a Doomsday player. It's never happened to me. You know, like not once have I been like, oh man, we're going to go to time. Normally it's like I cast Doomsday and then I'm like, well, a force of will. And you're like, Dave's. I'm like, well, I guess I lose the game. I can sit here and watch you like do the thing, or I can scoop, you know, if I know that there's no counterplay to what I'm doing. I have to assume that my opponent at least has an idea of how to win the game from here. Now, there are times that that's not going to be the case. But the scenario that I think people are afraid of, which is wild to me, is Doomsday's won one game, right?
Yeah.
Probably, if that's the case, right, game one, they win, and there's like 29 minutes left on the clock, let's say, right? There's a lot of time, right?
Maybe more than that.
Yeah, game two happens, and for some strange reason, there's now 2 minutes left on the clock, right? And the Doomsday player is like, well, if I can't win this, maybe I can draw this game and then win the whole thing. That's the only scenario where the Doomsday player has like a reason to like stall, right? Like, it's going to be pretty rare because of how fast the deck wins that the Doomsday player is going to be in a scenario where there's only a couple minutes left on the clock. It's game two. They've won the first game, you know, and they're going to get a win. Right. There is a scenario where they just want to draw it out, of course. But like a best case scenario for the Doomsday player is like is that scenario, which is so rare, you know, like that you've won the first game and now you're going to time, you know?
Yeah. And like the scenario that we're talking about here involves Doomsday resolving. Right. So we're talking about a game where Doomsday won game one and then somehow game two took half an hour. And at the end of that half hour, the Doomsday player resolved Doomsday. So whatever happened during that half an hour, were you never attacked? Did you not? Like, what was happening? And then, and I have to stress this, Doomsday is not running away with everything because you half your life total.
Yeah.
Like, that's such a huge penalty. I can't tell you, I mean, I really hate to give counsel to my Delver opponents, but like, I think they too often prioritize counter magic instead of turn one pressure.
Yeah.
And like, I can work through all kinds of counter magic. That doesn't necessarily kill me. DRC flipped. Even if you kept a two card hand with Volcanic and DRC, I'm about to dome myself for 11 or 12 and you're just going to kill me in two turns, no matter what.
Yeah.
Doomsday can kill really fast, but it requires resources to do that. If you see me mulligan a couple times or whatever, and people are confused about this, like Doomsday cannot end the game on the spot without additional resources.
Yeah, you need something in your hand to draw at least one card, right?
Yeah. I mean, and actually you need more than that. You need two out of the three of Brainstorm, a Blue Source, and a Burn card. Like just something to throw away.
Yeah.
Because with consider piles, you have to put something back in there to get out of it. So I don't know if you want to spend a lot more time on this topic, but I would say when this comes up and I hear pros talking about it, there are two things that come to mind. First, something that you already mentioned, which is that you should advocate for yourself.
Yeah.
And yes, there's this nightmare scenario. The pros, they're very good at doing that. They know exactly when to call a judge. They know why they're going to call a judge. And so that's why people are asking them this question, and it's why they probably take a hard line. Yeah. I actually don't think that the aforementioned podcaster calls a judge immediately when their opponent starts making a Doomsday pile. They probably give that person a little bit of time, and if it's taking too much, they advocate for themselves and they call a judge. And I'm not saying don't do that. I'm never saying that. But that brings me to part two of these conversations in that they don't usually talk about this nuance that goes in there.
Yeah.
Hard and fast rules about how long a Doomsday pile should take to resolve absolutely don't take into account all the other things that go into making Magic a social game. It's right there in the name. And yeah, so
The Gathering.
Yeah. It, like the card itself is already bonkers outside the rules of how almost any other card operates. And I, spoiler alert, if we're talking about new cards being printed, I have a lot to say about this, but all just to bring it back, hard and fast rules that apply to resolving this one specific card in the history of Magic that's so unique, I don't think they exist.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's a great appetizer for what we're about to talk about.
Eternal Dirtles is proud to be sponsored by Moxfield. Moxfield is the best Magic the Gathering deck building website on the internet. You can create, share, and find decks from Commander to Legacy and even fan-supported formats like Pre-Modern and Old School. You can see all of our decks on our Moxfield. Follow the links below to stay tuned.
I got you fired up. You
know? Yeah, I'm ready.
Now we can talk about the position of Doomsday within the metagame itself. So you were at SCG Philly. How did you end up doing?
I went 5-3.
5-3, not bad.
Yeah, I felt decent about that finish. Obviously, I would like to go a little bit better. I was 5-2 in the last round, and I lost to a friend of yours. I lost all of my matches in 3 games, like all the matches that I lost. I lost the first match to someone that I had traveled there with, Rich Cali, who obviously is an excellent player, and I don't think I've ever beaten in a competitive setting, although we did test the exact matchup the week before.
Of course.
And so I finished 36th, and I could have been higher. I don't know how much higher if I had finished 6-2. But that last one was kind of a heartbreaker. And I would say the overall picture of the tournament is that I won all the matchups I was supposed to, and I lost all the ones I was supposed to. I'm unfavored against Grixis Delver, Rescaminator, and Bug Beans, and I lost all those.
Yeah, those decks that put pressure on or can disrupt your plan off the top. So let's talk about the decks that you are favored against. What are those decks?
Yeah, well, I generally like seeing fair green stuff. They can't interact on the stack, and I can beat a lot of stuff after I've made my pile.
You can take your time, even though
I'm only getting 2.5 minutes, and people are calling judges right away. I can. Once the Doomsday resolves, I have tools. So yeah. Endurance, land destruction, I can kind of plan for all those things. I feel like sometimes, so I guess your commenters are going to call me out immediately, but sometimes games against things like goblins or prison decks, they're just over really fast because those are also decks that can't interact on the stack. But like any prison matchup, if they get the hooks in quick,
If they like Blood Moon you or you know, play a chalice on one or something like that, it's tough.
I think that they probably, similar to like lands, they need to have 2 pieces of disruption to really be safe. So I really want my initiative and goblins opponents to keep things that are light on their disruption and heavier on their clock, because I can, with a little bit of patience, and this is something that I've learned, I can beat a turn 1 Goblin Rabble Master by just waiting like an extra turn. I can't get out from underneath a lot of lock pieces. And it's the same against lands or anything that's trying to play like permanent based hate. I feel favored about those things.
I think what you're getting at here too is how, like, so a Rabble Master, let's say your opponent plays a Rabble Master and then they swing in for 1, you're at 19. And then they untap and attack again. If you would have just immediately cast Doomsday, you get to a point where you actually doubled the amount of life loss, because you're going to lose half your life anyways, right? So if you lose, if they hit you again, what, for 4 the next time? Is that what it is? For 6?
It's 6.
They're coming in for 6.
Because the Rabble Master's 4 and there's 2 goblins.
Right. So let's do that. Let's do that math real fast, right? If we go with the immediate Doomsday, right, we're at 19 after the 1 hit off the Rabble Master, and we cast Doomsday, that puts us to 9, right?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, so there's that, you're at 9. Now, if we, and then my opponent untaps, swings in, that's 6 damage there, that puts us to 3, right? We untap, and maybe we win the game, maybe we have to do a couple extra things, right? I think... a best case scenario is we win right there, but there's going to be situations where that doesn't always happen based on what you have in your hand, right? So you're only getting one more turn after that sixth swing, right? They're going to kill you right after that.
Yep.
So now if we wait a turn, right, we take six, we go to 13, and we cast Doomsday, and that puts us at six.
Yep.
That's still – so they're untapping and killing us still though, right?
You get another turn to get one additional resource. So the scenario.
Oh, you have an extra card in your hand. That's right. You have one more card. There you go.
I'm thinking of the scenario where you have in your opening hand a mana source, a dark ritual, and a doomsday. And the instinct is to just fire that off as soon as possible. But because you know that goblins, especially in turn one, is never going to be able to stop that, especially in game one, is never going to be able to stop that. You just take the hit from the Rabble Master, draw another card. Because if it's going to be something that you have, you should have kept a hand that has a Brainstorm, another mana source, an extra card, a Cycler,
because any of those things
let you just win on the spot. Mm-hmm. Because they're not going to be able to stop the Doomsday. You play out your second land, you play your Brainstorm, you get into the pile, the game's over.
Yeah.
And sometimes it could potentially keep like a Street Wraith alive, because we're assuming, because let's do the math, if they play turn one Rabble Master, and you go, you don't do anything.
Fetch. Yeah.
And they go turn two Rabble Master.
Oof.
Because they're making an extra goblin.
Yeah.
So now you're taking two more. That puts you, it puts you to one in the previous scenario, right? Because there's two extra damage coming in. But if you had gone for Doomsday, it kills you.
Yeah. And also, if you, it does. But also, if you had to fetch, you know, going to three life, you now, that what's called Street Wraith is out. You're at two.
Right, Street Wraith is off.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's interesting math. Actually, that's kind of helpful to think about it that in that kind of way, where like you're gaining an extra card, but you're also buying an extra turn in that scenario. And that I think that is that's a playing field that we don't often think of, when especially as the opponent. You know, I've built the deck. I'm ready to play this at my next local because they let full proxies in. So I'm gonna actually try the deck in a week or two. So my whole thought is like, okay, what can I glean off you for this, right? So let's talk about its actual position in the meta against. So we've got fair decks that don't have counter magic. You tend to do pretty well against.
Yeah. I think those feel favorable. They have a lot of tools, and I want to just be really clear, like Doomsday loses to everything. There's very few matchups that are complete gimmies. Cloudpost comes to mind as being pretty damn good, but you know what? It's Legacy, and they're going to draw three Endurances against you in the next game, and you can't win.
Yeah.
But it's relatively favored. But other fair green stuff, they have to have multiple pieces of disruption, and we're coming down the spectrum. Those get closer and closer, especially with lands playing Sphere main, for example. And then definitely fair green decks having combo hate in the sideboard, like, Cradle Control has Thoughtseize and Bowmaster is already good against you, and they have Endurance, and they bring in Snuff Out, and they just make everything difficult. Lands, green white depths, they have Deafening Silences, they have Spheres, they have all kinds of nonsense.
Yeah.
That those get closer and closer to 50%, and then you start going the other direction with all blue decks.
Yeah.
They can stop you on the stack.
So we know that there's obviously a problem fighting tempo decks, right?
Yep.
How do you feel about like control decks? Not that there are a ton of control decks, but let's go with like Beans, like a Beans mid range deck.
I don't think Bug Beans is favorable.
Because they have Bowmasters, right, on top of all of their disruption.
They have the clock, they have disruption, they also have Witherbloom Command, which just randomly hoses
can
you.
Get you. Yeah.
I mentioned that scenario or the anecdote to you about Doge.
Yeah.
casting Witherbloom against me after I had resolved Doomsday, and then really just puzzling why I didn't cast Brainstorm. I ended up just conceding because the game was over, but he hadn't done the calculus that like If I had brainstormed, I just die.
Yeah.
I have to put cards back.
Yeah, because you would have no cards back.
Then I die.
Yeah.
So Bug Beans, because of that amount of disruption, and especially like the versions that were floating around at EW, they play one Stifle, they have one Spell Pierce. Sometimes people go higher on Stifle, which is, of course, a card I hate to see.
Yeah.
Bug Beans, I think, is unfavored, for sure. Maybe the percentage isn't quite as high against a Delver. Grixis Delver being the worst, because Bowmasters really makes it difficult to go fast, even absent any other disruption. Like, that clock is harder to dodge than, say, a DRC, for example. Other control variants, like four color, anything with fourth Aerolingus, or even like the EW winning list that has black for Bowmasters, those are maybe around 50-50. Mm-hmm. If I draw a lot of discard, I can get under them. Like, their engines take a little bit longer to get online. They have a lot of useless white cards in game one. I don't care about Source to Plowshares or Leyline Binding. And I did beat control variants twice in Philly. They have varying numbers of dress down. If someone has been hurt before, like your friend who had two dress downs.
The two dress downs?
Against
yeah.
Me,
shout out to Dustin on that one.
Yeah, I was beside myself with that.
Yeah.
But depending on how many of those they have, I think that the heavier they are on control, the less dress downs they're playing.
Yeah.
Because the primary function of dress down in those decks, as far as I can tell, is to kill Urza Saga tokens.
Yes.
And so if they're playing a bunch of Terminus and stuff, they don't care as much. They're hoping they can set that up and maybe they go lighter on dress down, which is, of course, good for me. And I'm going to be better against those. I've had a lot of luck against your co-host, Force of Phil, because he
no
is
clock.
Playing a lot of those control cards. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Never has a clock.
Yeah. Turns out if you just draw a lot of cards, you don't actually kill your opponent.
yes. So, alone doesn't do it.
So we've got the fair decks, the tempo decks, the control decks. How does it fare up in the combo matchup? Let's say you're playing at Storm or like Black Saga Storm or something like that. How do you do in the combo matchup? Is it just a coin flip, whoever does their thing?
Historically, Doomsday has had a pretty good combo matchup because I have Disruption. So, yeah. You know, if you take, like, say, Oops All Spells, the most glass cannony of all things, if I win the die roll and I have a turn one, there's no chance they can ever stop me. If they have to mull low, there is a chance I can stop them because I have Force of Will. So it's not just like there's nothing happening there.
Yeah.
That's not to say that I'm always favored. And Storm decks, if they're built to beat counter spells, especially a lot of main deck Veil of Summer, those can get a lot more dicey.
Mm-hmm.
But I do feel favored against anything other than Storm. It depends how much of a combo you consider Reanimator. And,
this is,
and I'm not talking about UB. I'm talking about traditional.
Like regular black-red Reanimator. Yeah. Yeah. This is actually something that's interesting to me because this is why I switched to Infect, because I wanted to be a combo deck that could beat other combo decks, right? Like,
yeah.
I'm basically playing the Rug Delver plan with a combo kill, right? Like, so it's interesting to me that is also the position that Doomsday is taking, albeit a completely different path to victory. But that's an interesting take that, like, Doomsday and Infect sort of live in that same zone of, like, we can be the tempo control deck if we have to, you know, like, that's kind of a neat beat on that deck.
They do, and Infect scares me.
Yeah.
Because you have a clock and you have a lot of disruption.
But you don't care about your life total, so you can get wild with your life total.
That's true. But it means that you're, like, the problem in any of these kind of combo control matchups is that, like, do I use my counter magic to protect my own combo or to stop yours?
Yeah.
And I feel the same way against, like, Cephalid Breakfast. Those can feel a lot more like coin flips.
Yeah. All right. So, final question. Have you seen anything from Thunder Junction that looks interesting for Infect, or for Doomsday?
Yeah. Okay, so I said earlier that I was going to say I had a lot to say about this particular subject and printing cards into Doomsday.
Okay.
Let's start with, yes, I believe there is one card that's marginally interesting. I'm not saying it's going to break it open. It is the increasing avarice. No, that's not right.
Insatiable avarice.
Insatiable avarice.
We've talked about this card. I love this card. Okay.
So I was on Eternal Dirtles before talking about Imperial Seal and Mystical Tutor. And the modality on Insatiable Avarice is that it draws cards and it acts as a non-revealing personal tutor.
Oh, yeah, it sure does.
Obviously, it's much more expensive.
It costs more.
Instead of one, and it doesn't pitch to force. And those things are huge. So I really don't think this is going to replace Personal Tutor.
Sure.
Except we're always looking for a way to replace Personal Tutor because that card is terrible, as I've said many times before.
Yep.
And any Doomsday player will tell you.
I had to buy a playset just recently because I was like, I guess I'm going to play this deck. I should just have they're like $4. There was a point in time where they're like $50 a pop. So I was like, let me just get them now.
Yes. I took my medicine and bought them for way too much. It's getting my equity back out of buying Mox Diamonds for $20. So
there you go. Yeah.
You know, you win some, you lose some.
Yep.
But Insatiable Avarice, the fact that you can cast it and it can draw you cards is really interesting. I'm not sure why you would ever cast it off of a Dark Ritual, except
if you have one, said, right?
What's that? Yeah. If, you know, if you have a couple of them, you know, you're looking for the last thing. There's the 5 bits that you need. You need the Doomsday. And you need the mana to cast it and hopefully some disruption. And this can get whatever you don't have. So being able to turn a resource that you have in abundance, in this case mana, into something that you don't have, possibly disruption or possibly the Doomsday, could be a big deal. A lot of Doomsday players are experimenting with playing the One Ring. I've tried 2 or 3. And that is another way to spend excess resources that gets you closer to winning with Doomsday. Doesn't win on its own. It can buy you a turn, cases here or there, and it banks draws. That's another big deal.
Yeah.
And Insatiable Avarice is 1 mana cheaper than that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay. Well, Eric, it was a pleasure having you on. Thanks for the insights on Doomsday. That was that's the state of the meta. You're right there in the middle somewhere.
Yeah. I don't think overall that it's super favorable, especially when the top 3 decks are Blue-Black Rescaminator, Bugbeans, and Grixis Delver. But we have tools. Those matchups are not unwinnable.
Yeah.
They're maybe a little unfavored.
And then, the meta rotates. Things happen. You got to look at Legacy, you know, as like the future, you know, like you got to just like look well beyond the horizon and assume that like your deck will have its ebbs and flows.
On that note, do you mind if I say a little bit more?
Please.
If you have to go, I understand.
No, you're good.
Okay. So you asked me about Thunder Junction cards, and I said earlier, I don't think many more cards are going to be printed into Doomsday, or they're going to be few and far between. Other than sideboard cards, like Shieldred, like Demand Answers, the last 2 cards I think that are new in my Doomsday deck are Consider and Thassa's Oracle.
Yeah.
So since they printed Thassa's Oracle, there's just not a lot that can go in there. And it's even hard to dream of cards that they would possibly print at a power level that's reasonable now, even for Modern Horizons 3, that could possibly go in there without utterly breaking the deck in half. I mean, if they print Thassa's Oracle that's an 0-1 for 1 blue,
yeah,
then it just gets banned right away.
Yeah.
If they print 1 blue, draw 2 cards, discard your hand at the end of the turn, it's either not going to help anything, or it's going to be so powerful in Doomsday that it gets Doomsday or Thassa's Oracle banned. It's just, these are all these like bit players that kind of nibble around the outside that Doomsday is playing. We already have the cantrips, Force of Will, Daze, discard, like those things have already been printed where they are. So any new set that comes out, it's very difficult to see how it could possibly help Doomsday. More often, it hurts.
Yeah.
Bowmasters, Doorkeeper Thrall, whatever other Torpor Orb effect they're going to get in every other set going forward. Yeah, they all hurt.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we've got it then. Eric, again, thanks so much for taking the time. You're so people don't know, you're out there in the Adirondacks for the eclipse. So a very doomsday move, if I do say so myself. So again, thank you for taking the time out to talk with us about doomsday, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, Zach.
Oh yeah. For the gift that keeps on giving all year round, join our Patreon at patreon.com/eternaldirtles. And hey, check out this playlist we got up here with all of our interviews over the last couple of years. Some great people from the Legacy community, some really great guests.